third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Wednesday afternoon. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Appreciate Predators head coach John Hines for closing out the second hour of the program with us from up in Edmonton. As right now, the first of six exhibition games today, currently on NHL Network, and it's the Lightning and the Panthers. The Predators will kick off the action tomorrow against the Dallas Stars. By the way, happy National Chicken Wing Day. Hope you guys can take in some wings today. You know, we should
I'm gonna get some support wings
today. Me too. Me too. A little bit later, for
sure. I ate a lot of chicken wings while I was at the beach. I've been on a wing kick lately.
So. Magic City or at the beach?
I did not go to Magic City. No, I did not go to Magic City. So.
Okay. I hear they have good wings.
That's what I'm told.
Let's bring in Alex Apple from Fox 17. Strange segue, but let's do that. He attended yesterday's press conference with Governor Bill Lee and others. I was watching, and Alex was involved in some of the questions there. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Jeez, though, you put me after John Hines. I mean, I imagine a chorus of thousands of Nashvillians listening to this being disappointed right now.
No, not at all. That was big news yesterday. That was an important press conference. Like I said, I made a point to stop what I was doing and make sure that I was watching and paying close attention because I didn't know where it was going. What was your take from yesterday's presser?
Well, I'll first mention the athletics angle. The governor's going to sign an executive order that will allow for contact sports to begin again in Tennessee. Preliminarily, that's football, that's soccer. It would open the way to other sports as we get further into the year. And as he put it, athletics are a big, important part of a lot of communities. No doubt that they are. Friday nights in the fall are something that so many people look forward to. So allow football to begin in Tennessee relatively on time. The big question is, and he was honest about it, he put it this way, we're going to start. The question is, can you get to the finish line? So we're going to try to have sports. We're going to try to have some sense of normalcy in that. There's not a ton of directives other than follow the TSSAA guidelines, which is the governing body. And for sure, there has been a lot of research go into that. And I think the one question that lingers is you've left it up to the schools as a parent, as a student, as an athlete. You're putting a lot of trust in your coaches, whoever is at the helm in your corner of the world, to follow that and take it seriously. And I think how well coaches are able to do that, because it goes through them first, will determine how successful this could be, because it's going to be an ugly story. You know, if some coach somewhere is, you know, kind of shrugging his shoulders at this, then half the team ends up with some sickness. And granted, for someone that's 18 years old, they should be okay from that. But it's certainly something that you've got to look at.
So let's just start with, as you said, contact sports can return this fall. Did you think this was coming? Did you think this was going to be the message? Were you 50-50? What were your thoughts going into it?
Well, if you look at Bill Lee's track record on this whole thing, he's erred on the side of, I guess you would put it as the more fun option. That's a really cavalier way to put it, but he's reopened. He stood by the reopening. He has not mandated masks. He's sort of taken the more libertarian view of all of this. And so I thought that there would be an attempt to get this going, an attempt to have some kind of football. There's going to probably be weird intricacies to it. There's going to probably be masks for anyone that gets to come to a game. Who knows how many fans of school will feel like they can allow. And what happens when a player gets sick and he's quarantined for 10 days? It's not like the NFL. You don't go sign some other player. Are places going to have to cancel games? Sure, that's in the realm of possibility. I thought that they would get something worked out. The TSSAA, guys like Brad Lampley worked hard on this. The question is just how long it will last. Anyone who tells you they know is honestly lying.
Yeah.
It's going to be a weird season. I am as hopeful. I love covering some high school football on Fridays in the fall. I'm as hopeful as anyone that this is successful, but it will be a lot of difficult decisions left up at the very local level, each school, each district, and we're going to all have our collective fingers crossed. And that is honestly the clearest picture or the clearest expectation you can lobby, because we don't know how this will happen, and we can just hope for the best.
I apologize up front for not knowing their names offhand. The two ladies that were involved in the press conference as well. That was pretty interesting, and I was hoping you could kind of tell our audience and talk to us about they were talking about when kids test positive, right? This is the one thing that we've been talking about on this show. Like, it's not if, it's when. You know, when these sports come back, it's when they test positive. What happens? You got to have a plan. It's not if, it's when. And they said when kids test positive, there is, was it a 10-day isolation, 14-day quarantine? There's like two different ways to go about it. Could you kind of explain that and what that meant?
Right. So yesterday, if you were a parent of any school-aged child, you had to have tuned in because the big picture was about the reopening of schools. And Governor Lee wants every school to reopen in person. He thinks that there's no alternative for that. And so they've put out sort of a decision-making chart to help schools. And, you know, it's an interesting timing, end of July, to just now be putting this out. If you're a teacher, I guarantee you, for 2 months, you've been sitting there coming up with plans. If you're a school district, you're probably not just now starting your plans. But here's how it's going to work if you follow the governor's recommendations. A district could make tweaks to this, so you'll want to follow up and know what's happening in your neck of the woods. But it would be a 10-day isolation period if you are the one that tested positive. And you don't have to get a second test anymore now to be cleared. You need to just let the disease take its course. Once you're asymptomatic, you don't need a second test because a lot of times you'll still test positive and then you've got a false negative. You're wasting time at home. You're not still symptomatic. You're also probably not still contagious. So a 10-day isolation period, you wait that out. But if you are in contact, and this contact is now like 6 feet, if you're around someone within 6 feet for 10 minutes, then you have to do a 14-day quarantine because the virus can linger in you before you show any symptoms for up to 14 days. So actually longer than if you get the virus, which is, seems a little bit counterintuitive, but that's what the medical science is telling them right now. So that goes for any athlete and goes for anyone in a school. And so what schools and districts, it's coming from the district level, are having to do is submit a plan. If, you know, my son is out of school for 10 days, here's how he is going to continue to learn. Here's how he's not going to get behind. And that's not going to be an easy thing to do.
Right.
To just remove yourself for 10 days from the classroom or 14 days and get right back in. And that tough decision is all on the district to submit a plan for what happens in that very case.
And they said, Alex, that you don't need to get tested at the end of either one of those periods, right, isolation or quarantine. That I think I heard them say it's important to know that they don't have to get basically tested at the end of that. Isn't that what they said?
And this is good advice for anyone that is, you know, a working-age adult as well. What the science is telling them now is that the virus lingers in your body for a while. Right? You're not still sick. You're not still contagious. But there's enough of it still left in your body to where a simple test is going to read that it's present. And you don't want to be stuck at home unnecessarily from work, taken away from your family, taken away from school, taken away from athletics. So you don't have to get the second test to clear you. A medical expert, a doctor's opinion is just fine. And quite frankly, a vast majority of people are going to be okay after those 10 days, unless you're still riddled with illness and showing severe symptoms. So you don't get that second test, whether you're working and whether you're at school. And the odds are, if you do, it's counterintuitive and it's hard to unring this bell, but really you're putting yourself at risk to have to quarantine longer. Now, if you're still sick, you're still sick. And that's pretty self-explanatory as to how you feel. But a second test to confirm you're well is no longer necessary. And that's just one of those things that we're learning as you go along. I mean, there's so many smart people working on this. We started in March with no knowledge. Each 24-hour period, we get a little bit more knowledge, a little bit more, a little bit more, and we're able to better, it's not me. The medical experts are able to better contain and share advice on exactly how to attack this. Right now, you don't have to get a second test. And that's a big habit that we've all gotten into, that you can unring that bell, so to speak.
We're talking to Alex Apple, who was covering the press conference yesterday from the governor. And the big news sports-wise is that the governor has now allowed the contact sports to start closer to on time. So, Alex, has there been a reaction yet from the TSSAA? I know they're probably very happy to hear this news, but I'm curious their plan now to try to get this out rolling and do it right. As you mentioned, there's so many things to think about. You know, there's a lot of responsibility. If we're going to give you the opportunity to play, it's got to be done right. And there's a lot of schools, a lot of coaches out there that all have to be on the ball.
No question about it. And so they've got a little training that coaches are having to go through online. The TSSAA wasn't surprised at this because they've worked keenly with the governor to come up with the regulations that the governor's executive order basically just says follow TSSAA rules. He had confidence in that because they've worked together on this. I'll give you a little hit the high notes here. You can't have 7-on-7 scrimmages or practicing with another team, especially in the preseason. A football player can't practice in full pads until 5 days. The 5 days of heat acclimations has been completed, and that's COVID-related or not. Girls soccer is also included in this, where they're allowing drills and simulations in which players aren't engaged with an opponent, which is really just a teammate or coach. So they're trying to tailor these practices and provide good examples of what that might look like. And so absent a local mandate, schools have to adopt these Tennessee guidelines, these TSSAA guidelines, which they worked with a lot from the governor's office. And the coaches are having to go through this free online course that discusses what they can do to limit the spread of the virus. It's practice hygiene, cleaning, and distancing when possible. And, you know, if you're looking at it from a coach's perspective, my hunch is that they have to take this seriously for the very, you know, reason of a lot of them are super competitive. You're in the coaching profession, I'd sure hope so. And if half your team is sick, that's not going to render very good results on Friday or on game day. And so it's something that coaches are learning, but everyone's going to have to learn with pretty good haste here as football practice can start up here relatively shortly next month.
I hope that ends up being part of the message because, as you said, Alex, it's inevitable that the enthusiasm, your love of playing and competing is going to win over here, especially right. For those that are a little more casual about how they've approached the virus. And I think you have to challenge them from a competitive standpoint that the teams that are the most responsible and are worried about hygiene and distancing and doing all those things right and minimizing the chances that somebody gets sick, they're going to benefit on the field. I just hope that's part of the message from the top down because that might be the best way to get through to some of these guys.
Yeah, and even if you're a hard-nosed science denier yep. that thinks this is all a big joke for whatever reason, you just don't believe what is medical fact. And at the very least, if you're trying to win games on Friday, you're going to need your team to be healthy. So why not take the precautions, one? And two, you'll learn really quickly the potency of this disease if you don't. My mom works in a real yeah. small school here in Nashville, and they had an event back in March that someone had the coronavirus at. That spread so fast, 45 people ended up getting the virus at this small little school, and it shows you the potency if you don't take this seriously. My hunch is that drive to win is no different than what you're going to see on the pro level. If for nothing else, do this because you're trying to win games and you're doing this for a reason. And most of it at time, it's not for, you know, kicks and grins. We're trying to win, and so you're going to need a healthy roster, and maybe that is the motivating factor. It honestly doesn't matter so long as you know, right. kids are able to stay healthy and parents feel confident that they can send their kids into a good scenario.
Well, along those lines, Alex, one more for me, because I do think that's an important question. I do think there will be those that are a little more cautious, and I'm wondering if there are some schools that will take it a little slower and maybe adjust their schedule, whether it be high school or any other sport, and say, okay, the camaraderie is important, right? Practicing and workouts, I think that is very, very important. The routine, the activity for the kids, there's huge value, and that's worth some risk. But if you're a little more cautious about getting into competitive play, do you think there will be some schools that try to adjust and don't get back into it as quickly?
I would guess so, and I would guess that that decision will largely be made by the districts. I mean, I know that there are going to be, I want to say the latest number is around a dozen school districts statewide that are already going to start delayed. And then one-fifth of Tennessee's students are going to start school virtually in the fall. And that's just off of two districts. That's Davidson County and Shelby County, Nashville and Memphis. And so what does a metro school do? You know, what is Tony Brunetti over at Pearl Cone going to have at his disposal to make something work for Pearl Cone and those communities? And especially in some of these Nashville areas where kids come from some tough home environments. And the camaraderie, the guidance, the, you know, paternal factor of being on a team with, say, a good leader like Tony Brunetti at Pearl Cone is instrumental for these kids. And so the hope is to make those resources available. I think that, you know, football coaches, soccer coaches, any fall sports coach, volleyball, is largely going to be hemmed in by what the district is going to allow them to do. Others probably will go even farther and say, you know, we're not going to have this contact practice on, you know, twice a day or whatever the latest, you know, scheme is for summer practices and preseason practices. We're going to rein that back in. And even if it was allowed, it's just not the smart thing for us right now.
Alex Apple of Fox 17 talking some high school football with us on Darren Donick and Chase. So you may not know the answer to some of these questions, but, you know, I've been a part of your show on Friday nights. We know how intensive the coverage is on Fox 17. You're out at games a lot with Dave and Tatum back in the studio. So what does coverage look like? I mean, this is another thing that we're talking about in pro sports, as Willie just joined us because he's been getting ready for the game tomorrow, of how they're going to go about doing things. Grandmas and grandpas and other people aren't going to be able to attend and watch their grandson or granddaughter play soccer, football, respectively. So how do you think this changes what we do and how we can cover high school sports?
I think it's going to look very different, just like Willie's coverage of the NHL is going to look really different. And it might even make it more important. It might be a really fun element of covering high school football this year that not that many people are, one, able to attend the game, or two, feel comfortable attending the game, in which case passing along highlights, giving that glimpse would be really important. My hunch is that, and I've already read something about this, anybody that's going to be on the field, much less in the stadium, is going to have to wear a mask, will be there, social distancing, wearing a mask. I mean, as far as filming a football game, it's pretty non-invasive. A photographer goes out and films part of the game, and they're really just on the sideline, and they can stand way back. That should be pretty easy. I would think that it would be a great year for the Friday football frenzy on Friday nights. And, you know, it kind of is nice when, you know, people are going to rely on getting that glimpse through the broadcast. It's a nice responsibility or a duty to have to the community, and I hope that people are able to go. But I don't know that that's going to be the case. I've not seen a final word from the TSSAA. If there is one, I've missed it. And so whether people can go or not, you at least get a glimpse of some highlights, and that will be fun because truly, I mean, in a lot of these communities, even if you're here in Nashville and you live in a, you know, major metropolis, in your bubble, the high school football season is really fun. If you live in a small rural Tennessee, the high school football season is the talk of the town. And so you hope that the ability to share in that joy continues this year because, gosh, I mean, couldn't we all use it, right? I'm sitting here so happy sports are back. I wish my Cincinnati Reds were a little better than 1-4. Hopefully the Predators don't let us down. But it is just brings an unquenchable joy that I hope that these communities get. And if they have to get it through our show on Friday night, then it'll be a pleasure to provide that service.
Well, and you bring up, you know, some different points of the fans, and you think about some of these small communities. The gate for a high school football game or a soccer game is so important, you know, from the financial side of athletics in those schools, in those communities. And if they're not allowed to have fans, obviously that's going to be a big hit to those programs. We have seen over in how I got my start was doing webcasting, was the early days of webcasting and calling games for high school football. I could see that being another opportunity where, you know, you charge whatever the ticket price would be for the gate to get into a feed and watch a game and be able to make up some of that money.
It's a great idea, and I think a lot of schools are moving toward that anyway. I mean, most of them, I feel like you can stream now. Last year, I think every one that I tried to look at on a stream, I was able to find it in some capacity. I mean, isn't all of this technology such a huge blessing? You know, if nothing else, if you've watched any baseball, you can have Tom Brenneman sit in a studio in Cincinnati in a building that has nothing to do with baseball, and he can call the game for you in Chicago. Or, you know, you can send two guys up into the press box to call a game and digitally stream it for you in high school football, soccer, you name it, whatever. They're able to do that. That technology is so huge, and it would have been, it would have probably taken us back to the old ticker tape days, right? And that's how you called the game. It's not all that dissimilar, right? Guys are sitting in a building somewhere calling the game, trying to deliver the same fan experience as they were when the updates were coming through on ticker tape. You can find a way to do it, and I think most schools will. I think that there's such a desire for that. And like you said, too, if you could figure out a way to charge $5-6, whatever your gate is, and make a little money off of that, that would go a long way for a lot of these programs.
Absolutely. Alex Apple, Fox 17. Hey, man, we appreciate it as always. Good work, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right, Alex Apple does a great job for Fox 17. A lot of good stuff to unpack there. Willie has joined the show. We will react when we come back. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.